Neutron star is referred to as degenerate matter. That is, that it's not real atoms, it's just this squish of neutrons, I guess. I think that's the way it's described, is that it's not an ordinary state of matter. Go ahead.
Yeah, the pressure that keeps atoms atoms is either called, depending upon your inclination, electron degeneracy pressure or proton degeneracy pressure. So when the gravitational force overwhelms those degeneracy pressures, you develop degenerate matter. That's where that term ends up coming from.
Okay. I heard that somewhere, forgotten where the term came from. That's interesting. I'll just quickly comment also, it's been years since I've heard the voice of Saddlebrook mentioned, and I don't think, was it Rich who mentioned him? I wanted to mention his call letters, which I remember well also. His license did get suspended for his excess power, if I remember correctly. He was off the air for a short time, but I think the FCC let him get back on. I don't know whether he continued to use 25K amplifier or not. And with that, we'll go on to the space report. But whenever you're ready, Roy, that should be very interesting this evening. WB2BFM.
Yes, indeed. I'm looking forward to it, and you'll hear it in a second or more. That was Alan, not Rich, that brought him up. Alan probably knew a lot of the greats. So I appreciate his participation. I appreciate your participation. I appreciate everyone's participation tonight. It gave me another opportunity to go off on quantum mechanics. I hope it didn't give anyone a headache or a nosebleed. I mean well, but, you know, I like to talk about these things as well as radios and antennas and all kinds of fun stuff. So thanks to everyone, and it is now time for Paul, WS2N, for the SpaceNet Report.
Thanks, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N. And, yeah, we'll do that. And the neutron stars, by the way, they start off with a magnetic field, and when they collapse to it, become a neutron star, that magnetic field becomes so strong. And the spin of the, let's call it, stars accelerates, you know, collapses, the momentum increases, you know, you wind up with a pulsar. So that's how they really detect them. You know, you take satellites like SWIFT that's been in orbit for, 2005 or so, and these things are still functional, and they find these things all the time. So I'm more amazed at how they find these things, you know, the detectors, and how they do that and what they're made of. So very good, Roy, very good description of how they're put together. And I heard Frank in there. I quoted you earlier. Roy was talking about a movie, For All Mankind, and I told him that, yeah, I heard of it. You know, Frank told me about it. Yeah. And we had that discussion earlier on, so I don't know if you were listening, Frank. But anyway, SpaceNet Report, we're going to start off with the number one topic, which is going to be Starship. Starship, of course, is being built by SpaceX, massive vehicle. If you were standing at the top of a 40-story building and looking down, that gives you an idea of how high this thing is. Also, the diameter is like 30 feet in diameter. So, incredible vehicle to get off the ground. And this is their second try. The idea is to push a little over 16 million pounds of thrust to get this. To get this vehicle off the launch pad. Launch pad itself, the orbital launch pad stands about 70 feet. So that adds another 7 stories to the height of this thing. My brother was talking about going over the Burroughs down on Harris Bridge. I drive over. He does that quite a bit. If you, you know, if you're on the deck and you get to the top of the deck and you look out, if you had a vehicle sitting on the water going all the way up, it would still be higher than that, you know. And then that would be the first stage. Then you have a second stage. That's another 140 feet tall. And that's, you know, that's the actual Starship. So they have the Super Heavy booster, which is the height of the existing Falcon 9 rocket, like 230 feet. And then you have this 140-foot thing on top of that, roughly almost 400 feet high. But it launched, I saw it launch yesterday morning, Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. It got down to 40 seconds, and they have a built-in hold at 40 seconds, and they did hold for about a minute, but then they started counting down again. Sure enough, 433 Raptor engines ignited. Each Raptor engine delivers a little over 500,000 pounds of thrust. They have 33 of these things going. Last time they tried this back in April, sure it got off the launch pad, but they lost about half a dozen Raptor engines that were not working, a few of them right from the beginning. But in this case, they all stayed lit. And if you look at, you look at the telemetry, you know, you watch the rocket go up on the website, and they have a little graph on off to the side, and they show all the engines, you know, a bunch of lights. Sure enough, every single one of them stayed lit all the way uphill. So that probably is doing very good. The vehicle went for a little over 2 minutes, and at that point, it's supposed to go to the second stage. The original system from April was, you know, they were connected. They would just separate. You know, the engines would shut off on the booster. It was supposed to separate, and the second stage of Starship takes over. That didn't happen last time. They stayed connected, and they started spinning wildly, and eventually the whole thing exploded. They said from the flight termination system, the FTS. In this case, they really wanted to make sure the separation worked. So they redesigned the whole system. They put another interstage between the Starship and booster, and they call it a hot stage separation system. So if you were to look at it, you know, on the launch pad, if you look at it, you'd see light all the way through it. It's a grid type of setup. Heavy duty, I mean, the whole thing is, again, 30 feet in diameter, and this, the other stage is about 6 feet long, and they said the weight is about 20,000 pounds, so you would imagine it's got to be very strong, because it's holding a whole 140-foot Starship above that in place on the launch pad, completely fueled. But anyway, apparently that system worked good. The idea was to shut off the engines, on the 33 engines, little by little. You know, they shut the outer ones down, and there's a central one, and then there's three all the way in the middle. Those three stayed lit. The idea is, and you can see it on the graph, they stayed lit right before separation, and then as they're firing, Starship itself, which has six engines, are supposed to come on. What they do is they fire the three on the outside first, which they call them vacuum engines. They're all Raptor engines. These are all the same. Those three ignite, and because this grid is open, six-foot high grid, the exhaust comes flying out of the side, and to do that, they had to put a heavy heat shield on the top of the tank on a super heavy booster stage, so that the exhaust from the Starship would not burn through. Apparently that worked. because, you know, you can see it. If you, in fact, you can go to the video now, and if you haven't seen it, you know, you bring up Starship or SpaceX webcast, and they have that. We can replay it, and you can see that they did separate properly WS2S. The booster has nitrogen thrusters on it, so after separating, both boosters start making a 180. The idea is to turn it all the way around and then have the engines come on again to push the booster back toward Texas where it launched from. And apparently that started working okay, and that lasted about maybe 30 seconds, no more than that. And sure enough, the whole thing blew up. To have it go all the way back down to the water in the Gulf of Mexico and just crash into the water but vertically. But that didn't happen. You know, it did blow up, so they will have to look into that, what went wrong there. Did something burn through, you know, with the exhaust from the Starship when it did they initially separate? We don't know. I don't know yet. But they will look into that. You know, they've got dozens, if not hundreds, of sensors all over these things. My guess, they'll be able to figure that out. I heard one report where it could be sloshing in the engine. If you separate the engine and then flip it around 180 degrees, the sloshing of the fuel from, you know, one end of the tank to the other could have caused cavitation, you know, where pumps are spinning without any fuel going to it. A number of reasons could, of course, cause this thing to fail. And anyway, the Starship kept going. You know, the plan was to have that thing go all the way around the Earth and eventually go north of Hawaii and then have the Starship itself crash into the Pacific Ocean. But that didn't work. Didn't get that far. It went about another 2 minutes or so, about 2 or 3 minutes. And about 30 seconds before the six engines shut down. By the way, I said the three vacuum engines fire first. That's only to get it away from the booster. And then right after that, the other three central engines on Starship come on as well. So you have six engines firing, pushing this thing to orbit. No, and it got into space over 100 miles. I think it got as high as around 140 miles high. It got up almost to speed around 15,000 miles. I think they were looking for around 16,500 miles per hour. Normal orbital speed is 17,500 miles. They were almost to that, but they didn't want to stay in orbit. They wanted to deorbit around Hawaii. So they got up to around 15,000. It was supposed to get up probably around to 16,000 or so, about 30 seconds before, maybe a little less than that, maybe 15 seconds, I guess it was, before they shut, it was supposed to shut down. You saw the engines go out on the screen, you know, on a little graph, and saw a big flash in the sky, and at that point they pretty much knew that something went wrong. And they made the announcement a few minutes later that they did lose the Starship. So they'll have to work that one out, find out why both of these failed. You know, in both cases, did something you know, internal in both vehicles eventually cause the explosion? Or did the flight termination system work? They have explosives all through these tanks. Completely destroyed a vehicle, if that's the case. That's the way it looks. But there is a possibility that, yeah, maybe that went off, but maybe the thing exploded first. Maybe, you know, a couple of the engines completely blew up or something. I don't know yet, and I guess in a month or so we'll read about what the problem is with that. So we'll see how Starship does. They have another one, you know, almost ready to go. They have, I think, three or four of these things being built right now in Texas. So I'm sure when they figure it out, they'll try this again, and they'll eventually have to see if everything works. Separation again, and this time having the Starship making it all the way to Hawaii. And as far as I'm concerned, NASA needs Starship to succeed. So hopefully this happens very shortly. So it's going to take many, many flights of Starship before NASA's comfortable with this rocket. The goal is to eventually have one of these Starships, not the booster, but the Starship, go all the way to the moon and hang out there and wait for a crew vehicle from NASA on the Orion spacecraft to dock with it, and then they would use the Starship as a shuttle to go back and forth to the surface of the moon. Get that far, we got a long way to go. When I saw that thing blow up, the first thing I said to myself, it's going to be a long time before I get my QSL card from the moon. Yeah, that's my goal. I'll have a base up there one day, and they'll be transmitting amateur radio community already has plans for it. They would love to have an amateur radio station on the moon. And there's already one planned for the Gateway space station. They definitely will have that. Gateway is a manned space station around the moon on a permanent basis. We'll see. Any comments or questions before I move on to a different topic? This is WS2N.
WB2BXO.
WB2BXO. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, very good. I did miss the discussion of For All Mankind earlier. My wife and I just watched, I guess it was the second or it was the second episode of the second season. And it certainly seems like given China just announcing the plans for a sample return mission that the race is going to be on for Mars. In any case, yeah, it sounds like SpaceX did amazingly well making it into space with that monster. 40 stories. The thing seems to be about the size of the federal building in New York that I worked in for years. Kind of amazing. They actually launched this thing into space. Apparently the FAA still considers it a mishap, even though it was, for all intents and purposes, a fairly successful test. I'm not sure how they take jurisdiction. Mishap happened in outer space and not in FAA-controlled airspace. But I think there are people on the net who know a lot more about this stuff than I do. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, last time it took them a long time for the FAA to give them a license. They needed 63 different things to be corrected. That's what the FAA needed. Going to SpaceX, they changed 1,000 things. So I did hear an initial report that the launch complex seemed to be okay. Last time there was a lot of damage. They had to rebuild quite a bit of structure and redesign everything. They put in this exotic deluge system, the big steel plates, 500,000 gallons of water shoot through it, through these big holes that they have set up to shoot back up at the engine. Apparently that all went well. So that would be a concern, but for the FAA too. And the Fish and Wildlife people, they were down there. They were the last ones to sign off on this. They wanted to make sure that the water, with all these gallons of water, wasn't going to desalinate the water in the area, which would have affected a couple of the birds. They have to sign off on that, and they did. And then after that, the FAA gave them the license to launch. So I don't think that's going to be a problem this time. The debris came down. I think a lot of the debris, some of it Starship wound up in the Atlantic Ocean, because this thing was going like 15,000 miles an hour when it broke apart, and all these parts just kept going in that direction. So it's a very narrow field. It's not like it goes wide. It just stays narrow because it did explode in space, and everything was in forward motion. So it might not be a problem, hopefully. We'll see what happens. There's more things I wanted to say about this thing, but question. Oh, Wesley, go ahead.
Can I say a few words about Boeing SpaceX competition?
Competition with Boeing?
Yeah, Starliner. Boeing Starliner. It was, 2019, if I remember correctly. Right? And it was already competition with SpaceX.
Yeah, and they're still at it. And they will fly, I believe, this April will be the first crew flight. I mean, they've actually flown twice unmanned. But this will be the first crew flight. What was your question, Wesley? Back to
you. Yeah, there is a competition between SpaceX and Boeing. The one that I remember was Boeing X-37, known as the Orbital Test Vehicle. It was a man, it was robotic. But there is a competition between Boeing Heavy and SpaceX. I thought you may give some more light about it.
Yeah, the different topics, similar. The X-37B has flown six times. The seventh time is coming up very shortly. Most of the flights that they used, let me say, the X-37B is a winged spacecraft. The idea is to launch this thing. It's no crew, and there'll never be a crew in this thing. It's all robotic, like you said. So it'll go into orbit, stay in orbit. Initially, it was like 300 days, and then it's 600 days. And each flight that goes by, now they're up to 900 days. There's two of these vehicles. So as one comes back, and the other one goes up. Right now, one came back, I don't know, a few months ago, and then going to have a launch very shortly. Most of the flights have gone up on the Atlas V by Boeing, and Boeing and Lockheed build the Atlas V rocket. That's a collaboration between the two companies. That's why they call it ULA, United Launch Alliance, and that's the way they were getting the X-37B up. And when it came down, first couple flights, they landed it in a runway out in California, Edwards Air Force Base. Now they landed back in Florida on the old shuttle runway, 3 miles long, so plenty of room to do that. And that's very successful. They have heat tiles all over it and everything. There's no NASA money involved in that. It's all defense. So, that's part of their space program. Now, the competition you're talking about has to do with who is going to get to the International Space Station first with a crew, with a commercial company. So the competition was between SpaceX with their Falcon 9 rocket, and they were going to use the Dragon crew vehicle to do that. And the competition was Boeing and Lockheed, who built the, used the Atlas V rocket to do that. But Boeing was the manufacturer of the Starliner. So competition was between Starliner and Crew Dragon, which one was going to get there first. And it's funny because they had the last shuttle flight up to the International Space Station. STS-135, Montbellera left the about the flag there on the space station. He left it there, you know, to hang there. And the idea was, you know, who's going to get that flag first? Whoever comes up, you know, whatever American company comes up to the space station first. And it was very close. You didn't know which one was going to make it, Starliner or SpaceX. But it turns out Starliner started having problems. They had problems with valves that were not closing properly, opening properly. But they had to work things out where SpaceX didn't. So sure enough, they eventually set the crew up first. They started off with two people. Now they sent four people on a regular basis, roughly every 5 to 6 months. And they've been doing this quite a few years now. And Boeing is still trying to get Starliner to do the exact same thing. They're getting there. I mean, they launched one time and they have computer problems. They went to orbit. Starliner had to deorbit, come back to New Mexico. And that's the difference, too. Starliner lands on land. SpaceX lands in water. But, you know, takeoff and landing worked okay, but they didn't make it to the space station. So they launched again a year later. They launched again. And this time everything went fine. They actually docked with the International Space Station without a crew. You know, but they have oxygen and everything. If there was a crew on board, they would live. Because after they docked, the crew that was on the International Space Station opened up the hatchway and they were able to go inside. There were pictures of them. And there was some cargo that they wanted to bring in, which they did. And eventually that deorbited from the space station. Landed back in New Mexico on solid ground again. Now we've been waiting for a crew ever since. They made some improvements, some changes that they wanted to make, and now they're scheduled to fly probably, like I said, in April, which will be good. You'll have SpaceX, instead of every 6 months going up, they'll be going up just every year, and then they'll be switching on and off with Boeing, sending Starliner up. And each one's capable of carrying four astronauts. So that leaves a permanent crew on the International Space Station of seven. You know, you have four from either Starliner or from Crew Dragon. Plus you have the Russian Soyuz that launches up. They always have three people on board. You know, sometimes they're not all Russians, but anyway, they usually have people. Which creates a permanent crew of the International Space Station of seven. I mean, sometimes they might have 11, because let's say before a crew comes down, they'll send another crew up, and then temporarily for a week or two, they'll have 11 people on board, and then eventually back to the standard crew of seven. That's the story on that. Wesley, I'll turn back to you. WS.
Thank you very much for all that. The last question that I have is, not sure how much is that true. Elon Musk is receiving $50 billion per year financing for SpaceX. And what is the cost of the last experiment for yesterday, if you know?
NASA is not paying for the development of his rocket. You know, he's doing that all on his own. NASA is paying him for flights to the International Space Station or, you know, any scientific missions that they launch for whatever reason. But yeah, contract for the International Space Station, I think the last one was $2 billion last year. I mean, it's a drop in a bucket for Elon Musk. I think he's worth $250 billion or something. So, but NASA does pay them to bring crews up on a regular basis. But they're not paying for that development of the Starship. Now, once Starship is, you know, they are, I shouldn't say that, they are putting money to develop the Starship to the point where they want that to land on the moon, so I think there's money involved with that. they will use Starship for that reason. No other reason right now. NASA is just interested in getting this thing to the point where it could become a shuttle between the moon and, it'll be the Gateway space station going around the moon. That's what they're really interested in. But there's also competition going on there, too, and not with Boeing, but with Blue Arch, and I'll mention that in a minute. Back to you, Wes.
I remember the last time when there was some time ago, many years ago, when there was a discussion about course of Russian vessels to the space, and Elon Musk at that time was much less expensive. So it was like $98 million, shorted to $24 million per launch to the International Space Station. But yesterday launch, what was the approximate cost? That part, if you explain, I didn't catch that. Thank you.
Okay, I read that he's pouring like an average of $2 billion into the development of the Starship every year so far. There's a lot involved. He's got like a city built down there now called Starbase. So, how much of that money, $2 billion, is going to the Starship development itself? Well, the whole thing is everything that's involved, tank farms filled with liquid methane and liquid oxygen and water deluge systems and just a tremendous effort down in Boca Chica, Texas. And it's not only there, he's building a launch complex also in Florida. He wants to eventually launch Starship from there. So I don't think there's any way that I know of to figure out what the price is of what he's doing. But although I know it's a couple of $1 billion per year he's been putting into development of Starship.
So it looks like I should...
You can't really put a price on
be more
one vehicle blowing up like that.
He's a dreamer.
He's blown up to test the Starship himself. Send it up 6 miles and bring it down, see if it would land. And they all blew up until number 15, and that worked fine. And then he moves on for orbital launches. So we'll see. We'll see, Wesley. We'll have plenty of time to talk about this. It's going to take many years before he makes it to the moon. And the cost is phenomenal. I know the cost for the Falcon 9, the one that he keeps launching and landing on the barge or bringing back and landing back on land, is around $62 million. And then for NASA, to launch a crew up is probably around $110 million or so. To launch a crew to the International Space Station. So, and that cost is covered by NASA anyway. They have paid. That was a contract deal. I think they said, okay, half a dozen flights to the International Space Station with a crew, and it's like, we'll give you like $3 billion or something. And then they got an extension on that. Now he's done three flights. Now he's three more. So every time they do that, they'll give him an extension. If there's any delays for any reason, NASA will not pay the delays. SpaceX would have to eat the cost. That's about all I know about the cost of these things. Back to you, Wes.
Thank you very much. I believe it's time. Not much time left, so if you have anything else, back to you.
There's an important launch coming up Christmas Eve, unless there's a delay. Brand new launch of the Vulcan rocket. Vulcan rocket is the new one, also being built by United Launch Alliance, Lockheed, and Boeing. And Vulcan will replace not only one rocket that NASA uses, they'll be replacing two different types. The one that they use all the time is the Atlas V, highly reliable rocket, the one that launched the all your deep space probes and everything. Presently, the one that's going to be launching crews to the International Space Station. It's very reliable, but that's going to be phased out. Atlas V is going to get phased out for this new Vulcan rocket. Another rocket that NASA has used for many, many times is the Delta IV Heavy launches and the Delta IV itself. Now, that's a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen rocket that NASA has been using for many years. And that's going to be replaced as well by the Vulcan rocket. But it hasn't flown yet. The first flight is December 24th. It's got brand new types of engines. The two engines that on the booster that they're using are being built by Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin. They're called the BE-4 engines. They're liquid methane, liquid oxygen, similar to what Elon Musk is doing with the liquid methane, liquid oxygen on his Starship. And that's what what they're going to be using on the Vulcan rocket. And the reason I find it interesting, you know, there's a difference between the companies. Elon Musk will launch many rockets. If they blow up, he just builds another one. The Vulcan rocket is not being built like that. It's being built, they plan on having this thing launch, and they believe it's going to work fine. They've tested it and tested one piece at a time over and over again. So there's high confidence that it's going to take off and it's going to do its job. They're so confident at it, they're going to send the payload of the first Vulcan rocket on its inaugural flight to the moon. And on the payload, it's going to be a lunar lander. And the lander is being built by, the lander itself is built by a private company called Astrobiotic. Astrobiotic has built something called the Peregrine lander. The idea is that NASA in the future will have crews on the moon, and they're going to need cargo. So that's what this company's idea is. So it's going to be launched, like I said, Christmas Eve, fly out to the moon, and hopefully land on the south part of the moon, or you know, wherever they have their first landing is going to be. If that's successful, it's going to be a Peregrine 2, 3, and so forth. Now, not to be outdone, they're in a competition too, not with a foreign country, but with another private company. Astrobiotic is in competition with a company called Intuitive Machines. Intuitive Machines has their own lander, and their lander is called Nova C. So Nova C is competing with Peregrine. Which one is going to land on the moon first? WS2N. And Astrobiotics Peregrine, like I said, launches Christmas. It's going to take a bit of a... It's not going to go directly to the moon. It's going to, you know, go into a larger orbit, eventually work its way down and land. It turns out that their landing date, you know, is really like 20 days or so after their launch. Intuitive Machines is going to launch January. They're going to launch January 12th with their Nova C lander. But they're making a morbid direct flight right to the moon. So it's going to be like within a day of one another. Which one is going to land first, Peregrine or Nova C? I'll be interested to see. But anyway, Intuitive Machines is not being launched by Vulcan. It's being launched by Falcon 9 rocket. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. That one, by the way, has to be launched from Launch Complex 39A. Where SpaceX launches all their rockets, because they have liquid methane on board their lander. And the only place you can get fuel right now with liquid methane for this type of flight is at Launch Complex 39A. So we'll see which one makes it, hopefully. And now these both American vehicles and I hope they both make it. WS2N. Okay, one more topic before I run out of time here. We have broadband satellites up there. Now, SpaceX has launched over 5,000 satellites. I think 4,000 some odd satellites are still operating and working. They've put over 5,000 up there, shooting up like 50 at a time, sometimes 20 at a time if it's the larger satellites. And they're not going to stop. They have a request into the government to launch 30,000 more of these satellites. You know, I haven't seen that approved yet. But, you know, their system is working. It's functioning. I don't know if they have all the bugs worked out of it, but it seems to be working okay. Now, they have competition from this OneWeb. I haven't seen OneWeb go online yet. They have their goal is to put about 500 satellites up. Now, they have more of a competition from Amazon, from the Kuiper 1 and Kuiper 2 satellites went up. The Kuiper system is going to have over 3,000 satellites. This is all by Amazon. So they launched their first two just recently in early October. And naturally, they used an Atlas V, a Boeing Lockheed rocket, an Atlas V rocket. They didn't use SpaceX, I guess. You know, they don't want to pay their competitor because that's what it is. They're going to be a competitor with SpaceX with the broadband satellite system. Kuiper is broadband satellite. So Kuiper 1 and Kuiper 2 are up in orbit since the beginning of October. Sure enough, last week they ran the first test, and they had a crew. I think they were in New Mexico someplace. And they were set up, all kinds of computers, communication equipment. And they ran a test, Kuiper 1 and Kuiper 2. They knew it was coming over. And they're all in low Earth orbit, so that means they all have, like, you know, six-minute windows to talk to use it. And they wanted to see how it worked. And, of course, if they have thousands of these, then it will be uninterrupted communications. But for now, they just have the two, and they wanted to test it. Sure enough, they showed it. Well, you can bring it up on Amazon, one of the sites, the actual test that they ran. People in a test, they were communicating. I think they communicated with somebody in Italy, and not only with voice, but they used video, and they used 4K on the video, and it was perfect copy. You know, I watched a clip on it, very interesting. So, you know, never know. SpaceX, you know, is definitely gonna have some competition. Because they have plans on launching thousands of these things within the next few years. When I say they, I mean Amazon, with their new Kuiper system. So, we'll see. Any comments? WS2N. Okay. A couple more topics. We can cover them next week. I want to cover the, eventually going to be something called the International Pathfinder Mission by Blue Origin. You know, that's going to lead up to, believe it or not, competition, SpaceX on the moon. SpaceX is planning on using a Starship to transport people back and forth from the moon to lunar orbit. They're going to have competition. There's another contract that's signed up with NASA. NASA's paying them, just like they'll be paying SpaceX to develop a human landing system to do the exact same thing. Completely different system, and they're going to start off with their Pathfinder missions, and they call it MK-1, and that'll be launched sometime definitely next year, but that'll be the first test of a vehicle. It'll be a cargo mission, but it's large. I mean, it's about 30 feet high, and that'll be first test. And if that works out okay, then they'll take all everything that they learn with that, and they'll put it into a real human landing capable system. A lot of landings coming up on the moon if everything pans out right. You know, all these rockets get built, you know, developed, and economy stays strong. We'll have a lot to talk about in the upcoming years. God willing. Anyway, we'll turn it back to Roy. What's with time? 11:05. AC2GS WS2N for the Space Net Report for the TechNet. We'll be on tomorrow night on the Club InfoNet, 8:30, and followed by Swap and Shop, like you mentioned before, Roy. And that's always followed by Newsline. Just want to mention to Frank, if he hangs out, we'll tell Frank about the other movie I came up with on Netflix. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, our rebels now are done. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all the work you do on the technical net and all that you do for the club. You all appreciate it. I appreciate it especially. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had a good time. I hope you learned a few fancy words to use at your next cocktail party. If not, I just hope that you had a good time. And I hope you join us again next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. And to everyone, have a happy, healthy Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much, but eat enough to enjoy yourself. Be well. Stay safe. If you haven't had your boosters, please consider taking your boosters. It'll make you stronger. So, as per usual, just want to share the usual quotes. Dick, may rest in peace, K2RIW, who was the Limark technical net, would end his net with the suggestion to be kind to each other, and this is excellent suggestion most times, and especially now. We live in very strange, interesting times, so please be kind to each other. And, of course, good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. Keep your mind open, and, you learn something new every day. It's exercising your brain. You know, if you don't use it, you lose it, as the saying goes. So keep it in mind. Be well. Stay safe. And hopefully I'll talk to you next week. This is AC2GS, and I will clear after saying Slava Ukraine.
73, Roy. Very good nut. And I just want to see if Frank was at WB2BXO, WS2N.
Yeah, Paul, did you call me WB2BXO?
Yes, I just wanted to mention that we talked about, from all mankind, the show on Apple. Then also, after I was talking to Roy, talking about movies, there's a series, a four-part series on Netflix. I don't know if you get Netflix, but I just watched it. It was advertised on Amateur Radio Newsline last week. In the name of the movie, it's a series. It's called All the Light You Cannot See. So it's very good. I saw it back to the end of World War II in France, with the resistance and all. And the reason Amateur Radio Newsline is talking about it is because the main story has to do with radios involved with the resistance. Good story between a couple of the people. Very well done. It's taken from a book. Back to you, Frank. WB2BXO WS2S.
Yeah, Paul, very good. I do intend to watch that. I forgot about it. My wife mentioned that to me a couple of weeks ago. She watched it and loved it. And I did hear the story on Newsline about it. And today we wound up watching For All Mankind, and you probably got a kick out of the storyline of the guy who's stuck on Mars because the contract says he's got to pay most of the money back if he goes home early, which, since the Mars window opens every 2 years, I don't even think is a possibility. But I think some real-world contracts, the jobs in Antarctica and the Emirates and stuff, are actually written in a similar way. Go ahead, Paul.
That's with you're saying with Musk?
No, I was talking about the character in For All Mankind, who is stuck on Mars. He doesn't like the work and the contracts, so he has to give back most of the money if he leaves early. So, no, this time I was talking about the fictional story, not the real Starship story, which is, in some respects, more interesting. Go ahead. Yeah, I would not want to work for Musk either. I mean, what he's doing is fantastic, but it seems like the guy is totally nothing to work for. Go ahead.
Understood. Yeah, I agree. Oh, okay, yeah, because you'd broken up at that point, so I wasn't too sure. I heard Mars. I thought maybe you were talking about Musk. I don't get Apple. I've never signed up with Apple, so I haven't seen that yet. But if they ever switch over, play it on say, Netflix or something, then I'll watch it. But very good, Frank. You know, there's so many different streaming services. I'm not going to start signing up for all of these things. But I understand I'm missing a good one. Now, the reason that was brought up, Roy has discovered it, and he started talking about it. So I understand it's very good. But we'll have to, I just have to wait. Sooner or later, I get it. You know, so maybe they'll sign up with somebody else one of these days. But now I'm not going to watch it. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, well, a lot of these things do migrate over to other services after a while, so that is possible that it'll eventually go off there. I think they're going to do two or three more 10-episode seasons, and probably once the initial run of seasons is done, then way to one of the other services. Yeah, but I got a good deal on Apple Plus for 3 months. I forget where this Franny got it for 3 months. 3 months at a big discount. So we'll watch all the episodes we want before that discount period runs out, and then we'll cancel it. But that's how we manage those things. And that's what we do with the streaming services. When one of these teaser rates has come up, we get it, watch everything we want, and then shut it off before the rate goes up. But go ahead.
Okay, sounds good. But you find yourself glued to the television. Oh my gosh. Well, gotta see the. We'll find out what happens before the contract is over. Oh my gosh. Didn't have to worry about this stuff years ago. Like the space program was on 24 hours a day. We'd put it on, and it seemed like it was always on. Down 2, 4, 7. You know. That's what I used to do. Now I got to go searching. To watch this launch that I watched on yesterday morning, you know, I put it on my in a big TV, but you know, I got to go to YouTube and click around, and eventually you find it. You know, much easier years ago. And then I record CNN and MSNBC and. You know, they might have a clip on it here and there, and that's it. In this case, they had nothing. So, dead in the water. You really need to have at least one or two of these streaming services. YouTube is good; that's free. So, of course, I got NASA streaming, and a couple of the other ones that are free. But the only one I think I'm paying for is Netflix. Okay, Frank, I'm going to sign. Late, and I don't know if anybody else will use the repeater here, but I'll turn it back to you. And by the way, I wouldn't want to work with SpaceX either. You know, I'm a real pro-union guy, and they're all non-union. And I just read an article. There's like hundreds of people that have gotten hurt over the last, who knows how many years at SpaceX. I think they try to keep that quiet. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, well, when you consider that they did what appears to be about 10 years of development work to totally redesign Starship in the last 7 months after the fiasco with the first launch, I would not be surprised. I would expect that, you know, what they do is very problematic. And it does sound like something of a real study work environment. But some people like that. Some people are willing to tolerate it. And burn out the whole team and have to get a whole new one soon, probably. Anyway, 7-3. Interesting. And yeah, I was annoyed. I got up early, found it on YouTube, put it on, and then when I switched it over to the TV, something glitched. And by the time I got the live stream back on again, the thing had already launched and blown up, and I had to see the rerun. Anyway, 7-3, have a good night. I'm going to see if Alan is still here. WB2BX.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I watched it on the SpaceX webcast. And but there's so many to choose from, you know. By the time you find it, and it only comes on like a half hour before the launch, so you don't have much time to figure out what you're doing. And it's been crazy. Okay, 7-3, have a good night, and we'll catch you later, Frank. WB2BX, WS2N. Good night.
Good night. And I'm going to see if Alan, N2KW, are you still on WB2BX? All right, guess he's gone. WB2BX, so clear but listening for a moment.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2L repeater.
The time is 1:55 a.m. Celsius. Temperature 38 degrees.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.